A senior Hamas military official says that Israel is stuck in a quagmire in Gaza and will reap nothing but shame and defeat. And Lebanon's Hezbollah movement launches its deepest drone strike into Israel in months as Palestinian fighters carry out a missile attack on two Israeli settlements. This is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Now, 200 days into the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the regime has intensified attacks all across the devastated territory, killing more innocent women and children. In the north, fresh strikes pounded Jabalia and Beit Hanun in the heaviest shelling in weeks. Israel has ordered new evacuations in Beit Lahia, describing it as a dangerous combat zone. Non-stop shelling and airstrikes were also reported in central Gaza. Elsewhere, fresh shelling hit the east of the southern city of Khan Yunis. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, 32 people were killed and 59 injured in the past day, bringing the death toll to nearly 32,200. Months of relentless onslaught has flattened large swathes of besieged territory and displaced almost all of its 2.3 million population. Now, from Deir al-Balah, let's bring in our correspondent, Moti Abu Musabe, is there and reporting all those developments there. Moti, day 200, and we see escalation on both sides.
Yes, Behrouz. First of all, let me begin with the latest press release of the Al-Qassam, the spokesperson of the Al-Qassam Brigades, whereas he stated that 200 days after this genocidal war began on Gaza Strip and the Israeli occupation forces are still stuck in Gaza Strip. And he asserted that the Palestinian resistance is able to fight back against the Israeli occupation forces and the Palestinian resistance is resilient enough to face and to fight back against the Israeli occupation forces on the ground. And in the meantime, he saluted the Iranian retaliatory attack against the Israeli occupation forces that took place over the last couple of weeks. On the ground here, we can say that the Israeli occupation forces are still intensifying their attacks against several parts of Gaza Strip. Whereas here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against the eastern part of Al-Burij refugee camp. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes actually carried out several belts of fire against the same area, the eastern part of Al-Burij refugee camp. While when it comes to the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, it is still subjected to fierce and drastic attacks of the Israeli warplanes and the Israeli artillery shelling. As you know that, those continuous and repetitive attacks actually left hundreds of the Palestinian residential buildings completely destroyed on the ground. While when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the number and the toll of the Palestinian corpses extracted from the massive graves in the Nasser Medical Complex actually has risen to roughly 310 Palestinian dead bodies. And according to the estimates of the Gaza civil defense crews, that hundreds of the Palestinian civilians are still missing and trapped under the rubble and buried in such massive graves inside the city. While when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, the current situation is still hyper-hazardous as the Israeli occupation forces actually vow to re-attack the Beit Hanun Beit Lahia city. As you know that they are demanding thousands of the Palestinian civilians to evacuate the entire city of Beit Lahia. They are claiming that they need to engage in fierce clashes and attacks against the Palestinian resistance there, particularly after the Palestinian resistance actually managed to launch several barrages of the Palestinian rockets into the Israeli occupied territories. The Israeli occupation forces are still facing fierce resistance inside those areas despite the massive destruction they have inflicted in those areas, particularly Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia and Jabalia city. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes actually maintained and resumed their airstrikes against those areas amid heavy and continuous and chronic actually artillery shelling that ignited big fires and blazes against those areas. So it is notable and palpable that the Israeli occupation forces actually have risen their the ferocity of their attacks against all areas of Gaza Strip. And even, as you know, that when it comes to Rafah City, the Israeli occupation forces are still vowing and threatening to conduct their ground offensive against the Rafah City, raising the concerns among the people there that they would face even more catastrophic and dreadful humanitarian conditions. And as you know, that the Palestinians there have no place to go amid these unprecedented situations and conditions that they have facing, they are facing these moments. So the current situation is escalating every moment here in all areas of Gaza Strip. The Israeli occupation forces are still attacking all areas of Gaza Strip, and the current situation in terms of the humanitarian conditions is still exacerbating and aggravating every moment.
Yeah, we just, speaking of humanitarian situation, Mutia, I was just going to ask you about it, about the situation on food and fuel reaching there, because UNRWA defended itself regarding all the false Israeli claims regarding UNRWA, and it is saying that Israeli forces do not allow humanitarian convoys to go in.
Yes, actually, as I've mentioned, that at the same time, the Israeli occupation forces intensify their attacks against all areas of Gaza Strip. On the ground, they are still stalling and procrastinating the flow of those humanitarian supplies into all areas of Gaza Strip. According to the director of the emergency committee in Rafah City, he stated that the current situation in Rafah is catastrophic by all means. The Palestinian people there are still suffering from the severe shortage of the basic necessities, the life necessities, as you know, in terms of the food, the medicine, the drinkable water. The Palestinian people actually feel that they are going to face actually a real catastrophe after roughly seven consecutive months of this suffering that they have been experiencing all the time. If the Israeli occupation forces are going to conduct their ground offensive against Rafah City, the Palestinian people will be facing a real catastrophe by all means, because as you know, that the current situation on the ground is completely catastrophic and beyond catastrophic, and this is expected and is due to become more catastrophic, as the Israeli occupation forces are still using starvation and the deprivation of the Palestinian people in terms of those humanitarian necessities as a weapon of war in order to put more pressure on the Palestinian civilians on the ground and to twist the arm of the Palestinian resistance.
Okay, appreciate that coverage. Mutia Abu Musabeh, our correspondent in Deir al-Balah, Gaza City. Now, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights says that he is horrified by the destruction of the Nasser and al-Shifa hospitals in Gaza and the discovery of mass graves there. Volker Turk said that some of the bodies had their hands tied. That indicates serious violations of human rights law and international humanitarian law. He also called for further investigations. Last week, the discovery of a mass grave at Nasser Hospital drew global condemnations. Bodies were also discovered at Al-Shifa following an Israeli raid on the site. The bodies were reportedly buried beneath piles of waste and included women and the elderly. Mr. Lazzarini, the UNRWA chief, speaking there at a press at the United Nations, he said that Israel has not provided any evidence to support its anti-UNRWA allegations. That UNRWA staff, they're saying that UNRWA staff participated and had a role in the October 7th operation by Hamas and that sort of allegations. And the UN agency actually lost around 180 of its staff members while delivering aid and doing humanitarian work in Gaza. And because of the Israeli allegations, several Western countries cut funding to UNRWA. And Mr. Lazzarini just said in only 48 hours, there were several, 16 or 18, if I heard him right, countries stopped funding UNRWA, and which means a lot of loss for the Palestinians in terms of aid delivery. And that fortunately some of them are back, and they're waiting for a report soon so that hopefully the other donors would also go back and continue funding UNRWA to be able to do its job. He also regretted that that was not going to be a permanent UN body. It was going to be doing a temporary job, but for 75 years it's been doing this job and has had this mandate because of the continued occupation of the Palestinian land. That was just what he had to say in that briefing. Now, moving on with our news, the spokesman of Hamas's military wing says that the Israeli regime has achieved nothing but killings and destruction in its 200 days of onslaught on Gaza. In a video statement, Abu Ubaida said that the Israeli enemy is in a quagmire stuck in the sands of Gaza. He said that the regime is still trying to restore its image in Gaza, but it will reap nothing but shame and defeat. The spokesman added that the resistance in Gaza is as solid as mountains of Palestine. Abu Ubaida vowed that the Palestinian resistance will continue with its strikes as long as the aggression against Palestine continues. He also hailed Iran's recent punitive operation against Israel, saying that a massive attack established new rules and disrupted the regime's calculations. From Belfast, I'm now joined by Saab Shass, an author and West Asia expert. Good to have you with us, Saab. So 200 days passed. Tell us what the Israeli regime has achieved in Gaza.
This is from time to time we hear the Israeli media comes out with a news report confirms that the resistance actually have not been defeated. That's their own media. And in the same media comes and confirm that their entity shows its despair, the despair is experienced by the Zionist entity and its colonial settlers on the ground. And that due to the failure of their invading force, the number of it is huge. It was 360,000 reservists on top of 200,000 professional soldiers. So this is 560,000 army of professional and reservists armed with the state-of-the-art killing machines supplied by 70% by the Americans and 30% by the Germans to fight nearly a few thousand freedom fighters in the Gaza Strip. As Abu Ubaida said, the only thing they manage is the genocide against the indefensible civilians and the destruction of the whole cities and towns, as we witness what's coming out of Khan Yunis Nasser Hospital, the bodies being exhumed with over 300 and maybe 20 till now. And these bodies, as reports by the doctors in there, they said they've been skinned. They took the skin off and the even organs from the corpses. And I don't know what sick armies ever did such a thing. Even the Nazis did do such a thing. The same thing they experienced, the people in Shifa Hospital in Gaza. So this whole armada of West and the Zionist entity occupation failed to impose their will on the people of Gaza and failed to achieve any goal they declared, not to even release one prisoner by force. The only prisoners took place was negotiated and agreed upon. By force, they managed to achieve zero. And still now, they are bogged down in the moving sands of Gaza. And the resistance is controlling its territories on the ground. And that's why we can see from now to, from time to time, the Zionist entity's army visiting areas again with massive assault, which they said they purged the resistance from there. They destroyed the resistant brigades in there, and suddenly they are back in. You can see that in Gaza. You can see that in the middle area of Al-Bayj and Deir al-Balah and Nusirat. You can see that in Khan Yunis as well. So whatever they have achieved in 200 days, nothing except destruction and killing and genocide.
All right, thank you so much. Saab Shass, author and West Asia expert in Belfast. Now, Lebanon's Hezbollah movement says it's launched drone attacks into two Israeli bases in retaliation for the regime's assassination of one of its fighters early in the day. The movement said it's launched a combined air attack using decoy and explosive drones that targeted two Israeli bases north of the occupied Palestinian city of Aqaba. This is Hezbollah's deepest attack into the Israeli-occupied territory since the Gaza war began, and dead after an Israeli air raid hit a vehicle on a highway in southern Lebanon, killing a Hezbollah member. The Lebanese resistance movement and the Israeli military have been trading fire since October the 8th, a day after Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza. Protests at Columbia University have forced authorities to cancel in-person classes. In the Northeast, dozens of protesters were arrested at Yale University. In Massachusetts, gates to Harvard Yard were closed to public in an attempt to head off protests. Students have also set up tents and held rallies and sit-ins at other U.S. campuses across the nation. They demand that universities divest finances from manufacturers that sell weapons to Israel. A calls are growing for the UK to scrap a controversial plan to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda, as the British government says it will go ahead with the previously announced timelines. The United Nations says that the move threatens the rule of law and will set a perilous precedent globally. It also calls on the British government to take practical measures based on international cooperation and respect for international human rights law. Europe's highest rights body also joined the calls. It says the plan raises concerns about the human rights of asylum seekers. The British Parliament, in a heated debate on Monday, passed a bill under which asylum seekers would be deported to Rwanda to await a decision on their applications. That's a wrap for now. Thank you for being with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. Operation Axa Flood not only highlighted the plight of Palestinians, but also indicated the power of Palestinian resistance in a coastal territory which has been under siege for some 17 years. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Thank you. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli aggression against the people of Palestine has a long and tumultuous history, marked by genocide, occupation, and countless human rights violations. The Palestinian struggle to liberate their country stands as one of the most enduring and contentious resistance movements in modern history. At its heart lies the issue of occupation, with Israel's presence in Palestinian territories being a source of deep-seated grievances, violence, and international concern. The roots of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories can be traced back to the late 19th and early 20th centuries, with the rise of the Zionist movement advocating for the establishment of a so-called Jewish homeland in historical Palestine. The Balfour Declaration of 1917, issued by the British government, lent support to these aspirations, laying the groundwork for the eventual creation of Israel in 1948. The events surrounding the creation of Israel in 1948, known as the Nakba or the Catastrophe, marked a pivotal movement in the history of the region. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were displaced from their homes and became refugees as a result of the conflict between Israeli and Arab forces. In 1967, Israel launched a strike against Egypt, Jordan, and Syria in what became known as the Six-Day War. Supported by its Western allies, including the United States and Britain, the Israeli regime occupied the west bank of the River Jordan, including eastern part of the city of Al-Quds, the Gaza Strip, the Sinai Peninsula, and the Golan Heights. This marked the beginning of Israel's military occupation of Palestinian territories, which continues to this day. The Palestinians have utilized a variety of diplomatic and legal options to end the Israeli occupation over the past seven decades. In the early 1990s, efforts were made to negotiate a peaceful resolution to allow Palestinians to have their own state. Known as the Oslo Accord, it never put an end to the Israeli aggression as the regime continued its settlement expansion in the occupied Palestinian territories. There were other deals, including Camp David, which never resulted in peace and only emboldened Israel in its atrocities against Palestinians. Throughout its occupation of Palestinian territories, Israel has committed all kinds of atrocities against Palestinians, including massacring and non-stop human rights abuses, such as land confiscation, home demolitions, arbitrary arrests, and excessive use of force against Palestinian civilians. The Palestinian resistance to the Israeli occupation has taken various forms. It started with peaceful protests and civil disobedience, but with major world powers' unconditional support for Israel, under whose influence even Arab countries started normalizing their ties with the Israeli regime, the Palestinians were thus obliged to take up armed resistance to achieve their rights. The Palestinians decided to take up arms and fight for their liberation of their homeland, with groups such as Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad gaining prominence in the popular struggle. On 7th of October 2023, the Palestinian resistance fighters launched their biggest operation yet, a massive and deadly response to over 70 years of Israeli atrocities against them. Thousands of rockets fired from Gaza rained down on the occupied territories. The projectiles reached as far north as Tel Aviv and as far east as Al-Quds. Palestinian fighters stormed towns in the south of the occupied territories, launching deadly attacks and taking more than 200 captives, including military personnel. The 10-hour Al-Aqsa flood operation dealt a humiliating blow to Israel's much-touted military and intelligence, so-called superiority. Shortly after the operation, the Israeli military launched a massive strike on the besieged Gaza Strip. It has massacred nearly 35,000 Palestinians so far, many of them women and children. The Israeli regime, encouraged by the United States and its Western allies and support, outlined three major objectives for this onslaught on Gaza. The Israeli regime has not only failed to achieve any of its goals, but also was forced to negotiate with the resistance movement Hamas on a ceasefire. The failure to achieve these goals has not only exposed the limitations of Israel's military prowess, but it has also highlighted the resilience and the determination of the Palestinian resistance forces. Osama Hamdan, Hamas's representative in Lebanon, said, "There is no doubt that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood represented a success for the resistance movement, a success in carrying out a large-scale operation without the enemy being able to take action preemptively." Osama Hamdan added, "This operation succeeded in seizing the entire Gaza positions within just hours. This is undoubtedly a great achievement, but there's the question, was there any expectation for the enemy's reaction? Certainly, it was expected that there would be a reaction, because it is the nature of the occupation. It kills you, seizes your land, arrests you, and imprisons you." Osama Hamdan added, "Under this occupation for 75 years, you have two choices. Either you do nothing and it continues to kill you, capture you and seize your land, or you resist and the enemy will continue the aggression." He added, "But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to the right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for its occupation." The English website of the Mehr News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Operation Al-Aqsa Flood marked a significant turning point for the Palestinian people, showcasing the harsh reality of Israeli occupation to the world. This operation not only highlighted the plight of Palestinians, but also indicated the power of Palestinian resistance in a coastal territory which has been under siege for the past 17 years. Prior to Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Arab countries were moving towards normalizing their ties with Israel, overshadowing the Palestinian cause. However, the Gaza war that followed the 7th of October operation has shifted global attention back to the long-standing struggle of the Palestinian people for their freedom over the past seven decades. It's been a stark reminder of the brutality of the Israeli occupation. Despite Israel's military might and reputation, the war in Gaza has been perceived as a humiliating defeat for Israel on multiple fronts. Public opinion worldwide has increasingly turned against Israel as images of civilian casualties and destruction in Gaza have circulated widely, shedding light on the brutality of the Israeli military, which has left no safe zone in Gaza. Even hospitals and United Nations refugee shelters in Gaza have been hit. The 7th of October operation is a testament to the power of Palestinian resistance, showcasing how a small and determined movement can withstand the might of the Israeli army, which is backed by the United States and many other Western countries. This operation highlighted the unwavering resilience of the Palestinian people and emphasized that resistance is not only a means of survival, but also a powerful tool in securing the right to self-determination of the Palestinian people.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues. Islam is the way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina wa Mawlana Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. Wa ala Ahl Bayt al-Tayyibin al-Tahirin al-Ma'asumin. La siyama baqiyatullah fil aradhin. We're going to try and answer four questions. So if you brothers and sisters remember, the last time we spoke, we talked about five must-have traits for the mu'min. Five must-have traits. If we don't have these traits, but really between us and Allah, baynana wa bayn Allah, we're making real effort to acquire these traits, then yes, we can also be called mu'mineen. One of them that we talked about last time was a healthy fear of God. We talked about that last time. Having a healthy fear of God. But the other ones that we want to answer today are the following four questions. Number one, what should our relationship with the Quran be like? What should my relationship with the Quran be like? Number two, what role does tawakkul, or trusting in Allah, relying on Allah, what role does that play in the life of the mu'min? Number three, what are three acceptable takeaways when talking about that all-important concept that we've all heard, iqamatus salah, establishing the prayer. When that's an order for all of us, what does that mean? What are two acceptable takeaways? And then finally, last but not least, keeping that ayat that I mentioned in the beginning in mind, there are some people who spend, who try, who make effort, and in the end, it's all in vain. The last one is Quranic infaq. What does that mean? What does it mean to spend in the way of God? So, because we're relearning Islam, and it's difficult to unlearn something that we never learned before. We came to a belief about a certain thing, about Islam. We all love Islam. But we might not have been introduced to Islam through the Quran. Through the verses of the Quran. Through pondering the Quran. So because of that, we ask God for help. As always, we're going to start with that beautiful hadith, that beautiful dua of Imam Sadiq. He starts off with, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The Imam says this, wa arinil haqqa haqqan hatta attabi'ahu. O God, show me the truth to be truth so that I embrace it, so that I accept it, so that I follow it. What else? وَأَرِنِ الْبَاطِلَ بَاطِلًا. Show me, O God, falsehood to be falsehood. Batil to be batil, حَتَّى أَجْتَنِبَهُ. So that I can avoid it. So we're asking Allah for guidance. Our hearts are ready to be retaught Islam as we should. So back to our ayat of the Quran. So brothers and sisters, now if we can turn to surah number 8. Surah Anfal. Surah number 8. Verse number 2. So it should be this. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Innamal mu'minun. So this is God speaking. Only these are mu'mineen. Only these are believers. Innamal mu'minun. Only they are believers. What are they like? Alladhina. Those who, إِذَا ذُكِرَ اللَّهِ, when Allah is mentioned, وَجِلَتْ قُلُوبُهُمْ, their hearts tremble in awe of God. They fear God. When God is mentioned, خَوْف, خوف, right? وَجِلَتْ means خَوْفَتْ. وَجِلَتْ means there's خوف, there's literal خوف. I do fear God. I recognize His majesty, His glory. I have that healthy fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now to our questions. So today's questions.
And we'll start and we'll go through them, inshallah. The first question is, the second must-have trait for the mu'min. What should my relationship with the Qur'an be like? I'm a mu'min. I want to serve the cause. I'm here to hasten the reappearance of the Imam of the time. What should my relationship with the Qur'an be like? Back to our verse, brothers and sisters. So, the verse is this. وَإِذَا تُلِيَتْ عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتُهُ When the ayat of Allah, when the signs of Allah, when the verses of the Qur'an are recited for these mu'mineen, زَادَتْهُمْ إِيمَانًا It increases their faith. A true mu'min or mu'mina, when the ayat of the Qur'an are recited, so this is whether I'm listening to somebody else reciting the Qur'an, or I myself am reciting the Qur'an, it increases me in faith. There's a catch though. When is it that when the ayat of the Qur'an are recited, or I am reciting them, that increases me in faith? This one is going, we're going to go for another ayat of Qur'an. So what we're talking about is one of the miraculous effects of the Qur'an. It helps me increase in iman. One of the miraculous effects. When is it that reciting the Qur'an helps me to increase in faith? Is it everybody who recites the Qur'an? Surah number 38 and verse number 29. So, brothers and sisters, let's see if you can follow along with me in the Arabic. We're looking for an answer. What are we looking for? When is it that reciting the Qur'an deepens my faith? Is it everybody who recites the Qur'an? Is it automatic? I just sit back and my faith is increased? Or is it something that I do? And if I do this, then that happens. Whether I'm listening to somebody else or whether I myself am reciting. God says this about his book. Kitabun. So the Qur'an is a book. Anzalnahu ilayka mubarak. We sent it down to you. We revealed it to you, Mubarak. So it's a blessed book that we, God, have sent down to you. What was the goal of Quran? When is it that believers' faith is increased? Let's look at the Arabic of this, brothers and sisters. What was the goal? God says in the Quran. Same verse. لِيَدَّبَّرُوا آيَاتِهِ In order that they, plural, not Rasulullah, they, you and I, mu'mineen and mu'minat, plural, we, yadabbaru ayate, they ponder its verses. So when you and I go to the Quran looking for answers, trying to understand, why is it that it's so important to read the translation of Quran? I'm looking for answers. I'm looking for guidance, direction. What am I supposed to do? What does God want from me? When I read the Qur'an looking for guidance, then the Qur'an, it grows my faith. My faith becomes deeper.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi. كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه
Q choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A potential U.S. ban against TikTok took a major step towards becoming reality on Saturday, 20th of April, as House lawmakers approved a hot-button bill targeting the app. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of the story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The House of Representatives passed legislation on Saturday, 20th of April, that would ban TikTok in the United States if the popular social media platform's China-based owner doesn't sell its stake within a year. But don't expect the app to go away anytime soon. The decision by House Republicans to include TikTok as part of a larger foreign aid package, a priority for President Joe Biden, with broad congressional support, fast-tracked the ban after an earlier version had stalled in the U.S. Senate. A standalone bill with a 6-month selling deadline passed the House in March by an overwhelming bipartisan vote, as both Democrats and Republicans voiced national security concerns about the app's owner, the Chinese technology firm ByteDance Limited. The modified measure passed by 360 votes in favor, 58 votes against, and now goes to the Senate after negotiations that produced a compromise. Even if the legislation becomes law, though, the company would have up to a year to find a buyer and would likely try to challenge the law in courts of law, arguing it would deprive the app's millions of users of their First Amendment rights. Court challenges could significantly delay the timeline set by Congress or block the law from going into effect. The company lobbied hard against the legislation, pursuing the app's 170 million U.S. users, many of whom are young people, to call Congress and voice opposition. But the ferocity of the pushback angered lawmakers on Capitol Hill, where there is broad concern about Chinese threats to U.S. national security and where few members use the platform themselves. "We will not stop fighting and advocating for you," TikTok's chief executive officer, Xu Zhiqiu, said in a video that was posted on the platform last month and directed towards the app's users. "We will continue to do all we can, including exercising our legal rights to protect this amazing platform that we have built with you." The bill's quick path through U.S. Congress is extraordinary because it targets one company and because Congress has taken a hands-off approach to technology regulation for decades. Lawmakers have failed to act despite efforts to protect children online, safeguard users' privacy, and make companies more liable for content posted on their platforms, among other measures. The TikTok ban reflects widespread concerns from lawmakers about China. Members of both political parties, along with intelligence officials, have worried that Chinese authorities could force ByteDance to hand over American user data or direct the company to suppress or boost TikTok content favorable to its interests. TikTok has denied assertions that it could be used as a tool by the Chinese government and has said it has not shared US user data with Chinese authorities. The US government has not publicly provided evidence that shows TikTok shared US user data with the Chinese government or tinkered with the company's popular algorithm, which influences what Americans see. The company has good reason to think a legal challenge could be successful, having seen some success in previous legal fights over its operations in the United States. Last November, a federal judge blocked a Montana law that would ban TikTok users across the state after the company and five content creators who used the platform sued. In 2020, federal courts blocked an executive order issued by then-President Donald Trump to ban TikTok after the company sued on the grounds that the order violated free speech and due process rights. Trump administration brokered a deal that would have had U.S. corporations Oracle and Walmart take a large stake in TikTok. The sale never went through for a number of reasons. One was China, which imposed stricter export controls on its technology providers. Dozens of states and the federal government have put in place TikTok bans on government devices. Texas's ban was challenged last year by the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, which argued in a lawsuit that the policy was impeding academic freedom because it extended to public universities. In December, a federal judge ruled in favor of the state. Organizations such as the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, have backed the app. Congress cannot take away the rights of over 170 million Americans who use TikTok to express themselves, engage in political advocacy, and access information from around the world, according to Jenna Leventhoff, a lawyer for the ACLU. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. A potential U.S. ban against TikTok took a major step towards becoming reality on Saturday, 20th of April, as House lawmakers approved a hot-button bill targeting the app as part of a wider-ranging aid package. The bipartisan vote of 360 in favor, 58 votes against, marks the latest defeat for TikTok in Washington, as the embattled social media company with 170 million American users fights for survival under its current ownership by ByteDance, its Chinese parent company. The bill passed by the House this weekend closely resembles an earlier version approved in March of this year that would ban TikTok from US app stores unless it finds a new owner and quickly. By attaching the TikTok bill to funding for Ukrainian military equipment, House Republicans put the pressure on U.S. Senate lawmakers to consider the whole package in a single up or down vote. Policy analysts expect the Senate to take up the aid package quickly, giving it high odds of passage. And President Joe Biden has previously said he would sign the TikTok legislation if it reaches his desk. The fast-tracking of the TikTok bill shows how policy priorities outside of the company's control have merged to create a potent and potentially devastating outcome for an app that's beloved by many young Americans and that U.S. officials say is a national security risk. The version of the bill approved on Saturday, 20th of April, would, if signed, give TikTok 270 days to find a new owner, up from the roughly 6 months contemplated under prior versions of the legislation. And the bill also gives the White House an option to extend that deadline another 90 days if President Biden determines that progress towards a sale has been made. TikTok has vocally opposed the bill. For weeks, TikTok has waged an intense lobbying campaign in a bid to defeat the legislation, arguing it violates its users' First Amendment rights and threatens small businesses. It is unfortunate that the House of Representatives is using the cover of important foreign and humanitarian assistance to once again jam through a ban bill that would trample upon the free speech rights of 170 million Americans, devastate 7 million businesses, and shutter a platform that contributes $24 billion to the U.S. economy annually. TikTok has hinted it could sue to block the House's divestiture legislation, telling users in March that it plans to continue fighting, including by exercising our legal rights. A court challenge over the law would set the stage for a high-stakes battle over Americans' right to access digital information. Until this week, Senate lawmakers have been divided over the House's proposal for a forced sale of TikTok. That shifted somewhat once the House unveiled its latest draft, featuring a longer deadline. And in the days leading up to the House vote, on Saturday, 20th of April, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer emphasized the urgency of approving the foreign aid bill. On Saturday, Chuck Schumer said in remarks on the Senate floor that there is a tentative agreement for the chamber to take up the foreign aid package on Tuesday. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
All of us should feel we have a responsibility with regard to Gaza. April 10th, 2024. My dear brothers and sisters here, many of you hold positions in various organizations, including in government organizations, in their judiciary, in legislative branches, as a cleric, in their propagation of religion, and in military, the majority of those here are the country's officials. We must show our gratitude in action to the nation. I completely agree with the things that the president said and believe they should be implemented. This needs to be planned out and advanced. Praise God, our officials have a sense of responsibility. We can understand and see this. They are working hard. They should continue these efforts and be disciplined in all areas. The events in Gaza are not something that one can overlook during this Eid and this month of Ramadan without objecting and paying attention to these events.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The issue of Gaza is truly an important issue today. It is the main issue of the Islamic world. We must all truly feel a sense of responsibility in this regard. The hearts of nations are with them, the people of Gaza, even the non-Muslims. The marches and demonstrations taking place around the world in support of the Palestinians, the people of Gaza, and the oppressed people of this region are unprecedented. We have never seen anything like this before. This is unprecedented in recent decades to see people from Africa, Asia, Europe, and even the United States gather in the streets to chant in support of the Palestinian people during these tens of years since the lands of Palestine were usurped. So, it is obvious that a new change is taking place. There is a new development taking place in the Islamic world. There is something happening, and we should pay attention to this. The fact that the issue of Palestine has become a global priority is significant. Where? In London, in Paris, in European countries, and in Washington. The control that the Zionists have had over global media outlets throughout these years has not allowed for any voice to be broadcast in favor of Palestine or against the Zionists.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.